Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. Are you looking for books full of twists, danger, love, and heart-stopping heroes? Well, you just got lucky, because right now I have a New York Times, USA Today, and Amazon's top 10 best-selling author of romance suspense with me. She is Kimberly Trout. She was nominated for the 2015 Rita, the highest award for excellence in romance, and was thrilled to lose to her hero, Nora Roberts. Kimberly has sold more than 190,000 books in her adrenaline-pumping, high-action SEAL Extreme Team series. She lives in Southern California with her husband, two sons, a wild cat, an old snake, and all the other creatures her hubby and boys rescue. And I'm excited to learn more. So welcome to the show, Kim.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it is my pleasure to have you. Before we begin with your books, I need to know about this wild cat and old snake. It kind of sounds like a book title to me.
So we live in an area, it's not real urban where I live in Southern California. And we tend to get kind of little creatures that wander through. There's a green belt behind us. And one day I opened the door and there was a king snake sitting there on my welcome mat. So we welcomed him in because I have boys. And of course, they like all creatures that are crawly, especially. We've had tarantulas, we've had everything in this place. So we brought this king snake in and have had him for now roughly 17 years.
Oh, my, that is an old snake. I am shocked.
I know. I have no idea how long we lived, but quite a few years ago, we realized that there would be no way we could set him free because, you know, he's been here for so long. We take care of him and feed him. Oh. He's a great little snake. So actually, large snake by now. But yeah, so that's Louie, our king snake, as in Jungle Book.
Okay.
King Louie. And then our wild cat, we invited her in. It's been now almost, 2 years for sure. And she's a feral cat and very, super afraid of everybody except for us.
Oh.
So we kind of noticed this skinny little cat out in that same green belt and, you know, fed her. And one day she just kind of came to me and I picked her up and she crawled up me and loved me like no other creature I've ever seen. She was so desperate for attention and care. So, and she had a little notch on her ear, which I didn't know what that meant. So we took her to the vet and got her shots and put up signs everywhere in case you were missing a cat, but we were pretty sure she was feral. And the vet explained to us that the little notch was done because there's a group in our area that's called Catalyst for Cats that goes through and picks up feral cats and phaser neuters them and puts a little notch in their ear, depending on which, if it's male or female, left or right ear, to let them know in the future that, you know, that cat has already been bait or neutered. And then they return it to where they found it.
Right.
So she was already, had already been completely taken care of. It already had, you know, everything, her shots and everything. So, and she's come into her house and loves us and sleeps on my bed. And it's just so wonderful. But anytime she hears anybody else coming anywhere near our house, she takes off, runs under the bed, or runs up the chimney.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that you rescued this little cat. I just love that story. I just rescued 11 of them on my property.
Oh, my word. That's a lot of cats.
Yes. And the first one I rescued was just like yours. She loves us, but as soon as she hears the door open and it's not our sound, she flies up the stairs and goes under a bed. So,
yeah.
Oh, isn't that so sweet when they find you and just love you like that?
Oh, she's great.
Well, I love that story. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Well, we better get off the cat subject and on to seals. I'd like to highlight all of your books today. You have the Steamy Seal series, and we're not talking about the aquatic mammals, but rather the U.S. Navy SEALs. Paranormal books, books for young adults, and The God Whisperer, inspired by your son. Which of those was your very first book?
My very first book was one called Catch Me and Castile. That was published in 2009. And it is a little bit more a paranormal ghost story with a little bit of also some romantic suspense in it. I tend to kind of like that suspense or mystery element, and I have somehow incorporated them in pretty much all my books.
Well, now, you write military romance. Why? Why did you pick that genre?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting story. Before that, I had been writing a lot of very, very mixed genre type stories, like, you know, like a little bit of mystery, a little bit, you know, suspense, but then I had some paranormal. I, you know, had a lot of things going on in my stories. And after I published my first two books, I wasn't able to publish any of my other books for about 5 years. The industry was just kind of heading away from what I was writing. So it got to a place where I was kind of throwing up my hands and saying, what do? I can't seem to get these things published. I may have to self-publish. I may have to do something different. So I got a mentor, and my mentor is a fabulous author named Anne Marsh, who has books published by Harlequin, Kensington, self-published books. She's just an amazing person, an amazing author. And I asked her to kind of help me figure out, you know, what am I not doing right? You know, I really want to try to sell to New York. I want to kind of go from small publisher to larger publisher. How do I make that jump? So she, you know, very kindly read several of my manuscripts and said, well, you've got a whole lot going on here. maybe what you need to do is just like aim for the heart of New York. Try to figure out, you know, exactly what it is you want to write, and then, you know, try to get rid of some of the extra genre crossing bits and just aim for like a line, you know, maybe a Harlequin line or some line. So I thought, all right, I think I can do that. So she suggested I write down, you know, 5 or 6 storylines that I had going in my head of what I wanted to write next. And the one about the seals, when I originally thought of that, what I wanted to write was a romantic suspense. And I wanted to write about a strong heroine who, she's in a travel agency that's extreme travel. And this is kind of, I had just been reading about this in a magazine about these really cool places that, organize and design extreme travel for the very, very wealthy who can afford it. You know, you want to go up the Himalayas, you want to jump out of an airplane, you want to do all these things, you want to travel for a year, whatever it is, but they have these specialized travel agencies. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have a specialized, and my main character, her agency, is sending on a very influential family, a man and his wife and kids, and they get taken hostage. And so that's pretty much where that storyline started. And I wanted them to be in some jungle area. So I kind of, I put them in Colombia, and they were taken hostage there. And then I thought, well, okay, who would rescue these people? And that's where the seal idea came from. I hadn't really specifically been going out and thinking I want to write about seals. Mm-hmm. I just needed to write about a hero that could actually get in there and get the job done. Mm-hmm. So I created the seal team in order to rescue this family from militant gorillas in the jungles of Colombia. And that's how my series was started.
And now you've got The Seals of Summer 3, a military romance super bundle written by 11 different authors. How did that come about?
So that was the next step in my story, is that I wrote this book and I loved it. It felt like coming home. You know, when you write something that since I had been like hopping genres and doing all these things, trying so many things, when I wrote that book, I felt like, oh my gosh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So I loved it. I entered it in a contest, immediately finaled with it. I was like, okay, everybody seems to feel like this is my mentor thought, yep, that's what you need to do. And she helped me with it. So I then had several agents who were interested in it, which was very, you know, amazing after a 5-year span of like everybody not wanting to touch me. Now I had people who actually were like, oh, this sounds interesting. So I had all this going on. I was getting really excited. I was thinking, finally, I'm going to maybe be able to sell this book to New York. And at the exact same time, this little book of my heart called God Whisper, a small press called at the time, they're now called Goodreads, a small press looked at it and said, oh my gosh, we want to publish that book. So I was super excited. I had a book that was going to be published by small press, and I was having agents who were interested. The only problem was all the agents who were interested at that point said to me, no, thank you. Because of this inspirational suspense, which is God Whisper, and a military suspense are two different. They didn't know me well enough to know that, yeah, I can totally write that, both sides of that. Very, you know, I could do that. But they were having trouble branding me. And they're saying, here you are again, genre mixing. We don't know where to sell you. We don't know what you write. We don't know who you are. And so it was very disheartening, but it was also a great learning experience for me because I realized how important branding actually is. You know, now a lot of people know me as I write SEALs or military romance. That's who they, you know, when they're looking for that, my readers can go, oh, yeah, that's Kimberly. I can see that's her book. God Whisper is an amazing, fabulous book. We can talk about it if you want to, but it is different. And so the agents who were trying to figure out who I am as a writer didn't feel like they could represent that, both sides of that. So, at that point, my mentor, Anne Marsh, and several other, authors, fantastic authors were putting together a box set and they were going to, Seals of Summer box set. And they asked me if I wanted to submit my book to be included with their box set. And I said, absolutely, let's do this. I apparently now am not any closer to New York than I thought I was last week. So let's go for that. So we, the 10 or 11 of us, decided to go ahead and do a couple months offering of all of our books for a really low price, as a way to introduce readers to what we write. Mm-hmm. So each of us pretty much, most of us, some are different, but most of us put in our first book in our series so that they could get the readers could get a taste for it and decide if that's something they would like to read more of. For me, it was my very first book, writing like that. It was a little intimidating because all these other fantastic authors already had, you know, several books, but it was my first book in military romance. But I really had a strong conviction that this is what I need to be writing and that I loved my SEAL team guys so much that I knew that I could continue this as a series, each of the guys of the team getting their own book.
Mm-hmm. So it was a great takeoff point. And it's very interesting that there were 10 other authors who were writing something similar so that you could put that together as a box set.
Yes, and so that was three, we're now on our third summer. So it's 3 summers ago, and at that point, there weren't that many box sets out there. And now there are quite a few.
Sure.
And, you know, it's a great way for readers to kind of meet new authors and, you know, not have to spend a bundle trying to meet new authors, a bundle of money. It worked out so well, and I'm just so grateful for our group of authors. They're just such amazing people. And I really felt like I was the newbie, the low man on the totem pole, and they just taught me so much. And it's just been one of the best experiences ever. And that Steals of Summer, the very first box set, hit the New York Times. It stayed on the USA Today best-selling list for 3 weeks. It just kind of basically exploded my readership, you know, just bringing in all kinds of new people to me. Yeah. So it was a really such a wonderful way to go.
What a journey. And it seems like there's an underlying theme here of this whole idea of mentorship, where you specifically went out and found a mentor. And then as you got together with this box set group of authors, those authors became mentors to you as well. So very important, I think, to reach out and maybe find somebody else to help you along the way, not to think you have to do this by yourself.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There are so many. Writing is such a solitary thing.
Yes.
That some people, you know, have trouble maybe knowing where to go or how to reach out to others. But there are so many writing forums out there, so many critique groups and beta readers and all kinds of people that can help you. And the important thing, especially in that I have found in the romance community, is there are probably 99% of romance writers are willing to help others. I mean, it's unbelievable to me that how many people have helped me in my journey and just supported me and lifted me up and, you know, patted my back when once again I got a rejection. Mm-hmm. Oh yes, I got one too. You know, it's such an amazing group of, it's a community. So I guess what I would suggest to your listeners is that you don't have to do any of this alone. There are so many people out there to help you. And if you are not getting the support you need, look elsewhere, mm-hmm. because there's no reason for any negativity, including those horrible internal thoughts that you've got going. We all have them, to keep you from achieving your dreams. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to do it, there are people out there to help.
Great advice. Thank you for saying that. And as you were speaking about The God Whisperer, I mean, that was a book that was inspired by a very personal experience that you had. So I'm kind of surprised that the publishing houses took that as, oh, no, now she's flip-flopping. Let's talk about that book.
And I completely understood that situation because these were new-to-me agents. They didn't, you know, the editors and the publishers are able to take on actually more clients and more authors than actually agents are, because agents usually tend to have just a few spaces, a few holes to fill. And they, you know, they already have a very, most of them, unless they're just starting out, already have a very, you know, full client list. And they're just looking for those extra, you know, writers to surround them out. So, They didn't know me, and I basically had a few books that had been published 5 years earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't look good on paper. Let's put it that way. And also, you know, and I'm telling them I want to go this direction. And oh, by the way, I've also gone that direction. And in the past, I've gotten all these other directions. So I could understand why they would be hesitant. Because they don't know me from anybody, and they've got, you know, 500 people waiting to film them. So I guess that's another lesson of perseverance. You got to just, that's what you want. You got to be diligent. You got to just keep going and keep learning and growing and writing and all that stuff that you hear all the time, but is really hard to do when you're the one sitting at home or in your office and not getting anywhere. So God Whisperer. Like I said, story of my heart. My son was born with a really rare thing. He was born with one of his ears was perfectly normal and the other ear was incomplete. And what I mean by that is you could see the little shell of an ear, but he had no hole. There was no ear canal. Mm. Inside there, he had the little bones that fluctuate the sound that help you to hear. I think there's three little bones. Mm-hmm. He had those, but without any ear canal, they were just flattened and he had no eardrum. So, which is, you know, terribly sad when your little baby is born and you say, oh my goodness, yeah. You know, what happened here? And it wasn't so strange looking that that most people would even notice. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had an ear. It just wasn't fully formed.
Right.
So, and that's actually called microtia and atresia, but technical words. So anyway, growing as he got a little bit older, the doctors would tell us, you know, they could possibly fix that ear, but it's a very dangerous operation because the facial nerve runs right there by your ear, mm-hmm. and somebody who doesn't know what they're doing could actually get in there and nick that facial nerve, and then you'd have paralysis
right.
on one half of your face.
Wow.
So that didn't sound very good. And all the doctors and in our community, in our medical system, said they wouldn't touch it. So, but as he got older, we found out that he could actually. We took him to UCLA, to the head surgeon there at UCLA, the top guy, and asked him, had he ever seen anything like this? Had he ever done anything like this? And he said he had one or two surgeries that were similar, not exactly the same, but yes, he could do it, he said. And we asked him the question, would you do it if it was your child? And his answer was, you know, children who have one ear that's working perfectly fine can be very successful. They, you know, you just have to put them in the right place in the classroom. But we don't really know all the things that he would be missing in the classroom. And on top of that, you don't hear in stereo if you just have one ear. So you can't really always tell where directions are coming from, where sounds are coming from, the direction that they're coming from. So if a car is coming down the street and he's 3 years old, he might not look in the right direction when he's trying to cross. Just things like that for safety, for education reasons, for somebody at some point when he's older who wants to whisper sweet nothings in his ear, he wouldn't hear them. So we thought long and hard and eventually decided to go ahead and have this operation. And so they drilled a ear canal for him. They created a ear drum with the tissue from the back of his ear. They lifted up the little bones, and while he was in the operating room, those little bones vibrated to the sound.
Oh, Dr. gosh. Made.
It was an absolute miracle.
Oh.
And so later, when he actually, you know, didn't have all the gauzy stuff in his ear and it was healing and everything, he was able to hear sounds. Of course, being mom, of course, I, you know, cried my eyes out and was just so grateful. And this amazing, you know, gratitude was just so overwhelming and so powerful that I came up with this idea for this book called God Whisper. And of course, since, you know, I had to be a romantic suspense because that's the way I roll, I made it a story about a mother and her young 8-year-old son who are hiding for their lives in a very small offbeat town, which very much resembles my hometown. Anyway, they're hiding in this offbeat town, and the little boy has an ear surgery that is even more extensive than my son's because he barely had an ear, the little boy in the story. And on the table, as they're operating, the boy can hear God. And from the rest of the story, he's able to hear God. And just that, so you've got this amazing miracle going on, but you also have this horrible fear that the mother is dealing with, that that when this gets out, that everybody is going to be, you know, coming to her son. He's going to be on TV. It's going to get out where they are, and they're in big trouble. So it's kind of a redemption story, and it's kind of a it's very much a mother's love story. And just kind of how it's cute and it's sweet, and it also has the danger running through it. And it's just, I love that book. and you know, I hope my readers do too. And so it was very different than my Seals book, but it has a lot of the same sort of elements in that, you know, you sacrifice and you do everything you possibly can for the people you love. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my running theme.
Oh, that's such a gift to your son and probably a little bit of a cathartic position to put yourself in to be able to write during that time as well. Now, you also write other children's books, Saving Miner's Gulch.
Yes. I wrote a couple like boy stories because, you know, my boys are obviously probably not going to read the romance. Not into that, Mom. Thank you very much. but I did write some boy stories that also have a lot of kind of historical. It's a very historical about the Gold Rush, but also has a toast in it and a lot of twists and turns and danger. So I wrote that for them and for the a lot of schools in my area and actually outside the area too have used that book in their classrooms for fourth graders who are studying Gold Rush.
Wow. So you are very diverse, yet you still have that same underlying theme. So let's dig a little bit into your writing process for a bit. They talk about pantsters or plotsters. Do you fall into either one of those sides?
I'm sort of a recovering pantser.
Oh, okay.
I was very much a pantser, which means that how I usually write is I get the storyline kind of comes to me before the characters come to me. There are many romance authors who are thinking character first because our books tend to be character-driven books. But in my stories, I almost always think about the plot line first and then try to figure out what characters would have the most to lose if they were in that plot. And so hence the, you know, kind of how I came up on the seals. So what I would usually do is I would start writing, you know, thinking about the plot, and I would kind of jot down some ideas about what plot, you know, what has to happen in the story. And then I would usually kind of like see scenes in my head, you know, almost like movie snippets of what I would think, you know, the most important scenes that would need to be in there. And I would jot those down on sort of like a loose outline. And then once I kind of had an idea where the story was going and how the story would end, I would then do character sketches and try to figure out who the characters were and just, you know, really try to delve into who they are, what's important to them, why this particular plot is really going to suck for them in the beginning. It's going to be really hard and they're going to have to work through it. And what, you know, what do they have to lose? All those kind of important elements. Mm-hmm. And then by that time, I was usually so chomping at the bit to get writing. I'm so excited to go that I would just start writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then somewhere around the middle or, you know, usually around the middle or two thirds in, I would go, oh my gosh, these characters have changed everything on me. I don't know what I'm doing here because I would kind of let them have free reign. And then I'd find out what? You didn't tell me this in the beginning. Great. Now I have to go back and change the whole darn thing. And so I got to the, you know, I was doing that, and that was sort of my process until I met Anne Marsh and as my mentor. And she was like, you know, what happens when you actually sell to New York is a lot of times an editor will come along and say, oh, my gosh, we have this hole in the schedule. Somebody dropped out. Something happened. Something crashed and burned. Can you write a story? Can you send us something in 6 weeks? And she said that it has happened to her 3 or 4 times. I mean, it's not like a one-off, this could happen to you. And I said, oh my gosh, no, there's no way I couldn't do it. And she said, yes, you can. And I want to see if you can do that with this first seal book that I was talking about, Coming in Hot, the very first one in my series. And I thought she was absolutely stark-raving crazy. And she said, nope, you can do it, but in order to do it, you need to write the synopsis first so you know where you're going. And I said, oh, no, synopsis are things that I do at the very end when I've written the book and rewritten it 50 times and you know, sent it to all my beta readers 10 times. And when she said, no, not that way. Let's try it this way. She said, write your synopsis first, and then you'll be able to write. And I said, how can you write a synopsis? How can you write a complete detailed synopsis about something you have never written? that made absolutely no sense to me. And she said, you'll be surprised. Give it a try. And that is now my new process because, oh my gosh, that was so amazing and so fun. In the past, I would write a synopsis and I would be just grumbling and complaining and sweating and I hate this and how can I condense a 300-something page book into, you know, a 5 to 10 page synopsis? That's ridiculous. I can't do it. You know, can you hear me? grumble. But instead of doing that, this way it's like you can kind of free up your creativity and your imagination and you can say, well, and then this happened and then, oh my gosh, then that happened and then da 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 da. And right. And then at the end, you go back and you see where your holes are. Oh, well, that's stupid. That obviously can't work. That kind of thing. And the way she described writing a synopsis isn't just about the plot points, this, but this happened. And the reason it happened that is an emotional, problem for my character. This plot line is an emotional tug, pull, punch in the face on my character because. And as you do that, then I can also weave in the emotion. What's happening? Why it's important? What's going to cause my character to go from spot A to spot B? And the conflict and what's really necessary? And get all that down. And then, oh my gosh, it's like I saw the entire book. I know exactly what I need to do. And then I wrote that book in not 6 but 5 weeks. Oh. And I wrote the next one in 6 weeks. And since then, I've been able to do that. Once I get where I need to go and understand my characters really well, I still kind of need to do that character analysis part. Mm-hmm. So I really understand them and understand why these little plot points are really, really emotionally drawing them in or hurting them or changing them. Once I understand all those things, you know, it's a go. And I sit down and I'm kind of a numbers person too. And so I create an Excel spreadsheet and I have each of the days marked down and I figure out, okay, in order to get this done in 6 weeks, by this date down here and to have however many words I think it's going to be, how many words do I need to write per day? And so I get going and then beginning, it goes really fast in the beginning. I tend to get towards the middle, sort of starts slowing down again a little bit. I figure out, okay, am I missing something? What's going on? Why am I dragging my heels? I make tweaks here and there. And then boom, I start going again. And usually, towards the ending, I'm going so fast I'm, you know, doubling and tripling my average daily word count, and then it's done.
This is fantastic advice and information. As you were speaking, I was thinking it's similar to taking a road trip and having no idea where you're going, so you just get in your car and wander around. But yeah, if you have a destination, sure, you're allowed to zigzag along the way and make these unplanned stops, but at least you know where you want to land ultimately. So yeah, I can see how that allows you to be so much more prolific as well. That was excellent advice. Thank you for talking about that.
Sure. And, I think the thing for, you know, budding writers and authors in general to understand is that everybody has their own process.
Mm-hmm.
Mine may not work for others. And, you know, part of the whole journey and becoming prolific is figuring out exactly what works for you. And that's, you know, that's kind of a long haul sometimes, mm-hmm. to actually figure out what works. I thought for sure the fancy thing was working. Until I found out that, it really, really wasn't. So if I allow myself to, like you said, pants within the journey, then I'm happy. I can take road trips. I can find out, oh, my character isn't exactly who I thought they were. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's fine. I can work that in. But if I did that in the middle without having any idea where I was going, then, it has been disaster. I'll give you an example. On my Felix Dream team, I did what I told you is my new process all the way up until the book that I just released, which is Bring the Heat. And that's my fourth book in the series. When I got there, I'm like, I know my character so well. I know exactly what I need to do in this book. I know where I'm going. I know who the bad guys are. I know the technology we're going to use. I know all this stuff. So I'm just going to write. I'm just going to pants it. Well, that didn't work so well. I got about more than halfway in, and I realized that all of my characters were going to die. Like everyone. No one was getting out of the book alive. I had written myself into such a horrible situation, and I had no idea how to fix it. It was really bad. And it's not a happy ending if every character in the book dies. That's not it. So I went back and I talked with my mentor, and I talked with a bunch of authors that I know were part of a forum that's called Romance Divas, which is an excellent place to ask questions and get help. And I said, help, I don't know what to do. All my characters are going to die. And so they, you know, had me talk, you know, I talked through, this is what I've done, and I don't know how to fix it. And after, you know, a couple weeks of having to work it through, I finally realized where I had to back up in the story and change things so that they would all survive. Mm-hmm. So that was a really good learning lesson for me. I can't pants like that. I don't want to end up in a place where I'm on a deadline and I can't. I've just realized that everybody's going to die.
Mm-hmm. Well, the moral of the story is don't tinker with your successful process.
Don't get all cocky and think you can just
exactly.
Go free.
This makes me think of your Twitter description, because I love that. You put romantic suspense author living the dream. Dream includes coffee, dark chocolate, and plotting high-action love stories while wearing yoga pants. And I really think you've given our listeners and writers plenty of tips today who also wish to live their dream. I had so many more questions for you today, but maybe we need to do another interview some other time. As we begin to wrap up, is there anything that we missed that you would like to talk about today?
Okay. So another book that is, I'm starting a kind of a secondary series that seals who have come home, basically, and who are still no longer out there as on a SEAL team, but who are still heroes at home and still contributing to our society in amazing, wonderful ways. And the first book that I have in that series is called The Guardian, and it was also one that is based on a true life situation, and it's based on an ex-SEAL who is now working in the medical community trying to help fund medical trials that aren't paid for by other organizations because they're too risky, or they're in communities that are too risky. And so this story takes place in Haiti, and it starts right before the big earthquake that happened in Haiti. Mm-hmm. And it's very gritty, kind of intense, and it also has some very quirky characters. But without giving too much away, but I really love that book too, and I'm hoping that people take a chance on just kind of, it's very kind of different, mm-hmm. but it has a little bit of a paranormal element just because it's Haiti and there's voodoo. Voodoo is part of their culture and religion. That's the only other book we had talked about, and that one's fun, but it's also very realistic. And I think it'll make your heart pound.
Oh my goodness. So we can look forward to that. And where can we find that book along with all of the rest of your books?
Anywhere that you normally would buy a digital book or a paperback. Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, those are the typical normal places. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to get a paperback through your bookstore, all those books are in paperback. You can just ask your bookstore to order it for you if that's the way you want to, you know, get your books. Other than that, they're available and pretty. I just recently signed a contract for all five of my books with Audible, so Eventually, they'll be coming out as audiobooks as well.
Great, great. And your website?
It's www.kimberlytrout.com. And so, you know, bless my parents, they spelled Kimberly with an E-Y on the end. And then Trout is my maiden name. And so it's not spelled like the fish. It's T-R-O-U-T-T-E and then .com.
KimberlyTrout.com. I have to thank you so much for this conversation today. You just exceeded my expectations. So many great pieces of advice for up-and-coming authors. And just encourage everyone to get a copy of your books. Visit your website, KimberlyTrout.com. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.